Are you sure you have never heard of us before, or of the scrolls, or Calum? I only ask because how is it possible? The same question had been running through Liv's head since they stepped out of the professor's office. How was it that her tattoo was a copy of the very scrolls Cedric was looking for? How much of a coincidence was it that they'd met? Because if it wasn't a coincidence, but something larger at work, the thought was too terrifying. Liv couldn't stand the idea that she had even less control over her life than she'd thought. "I don't know how it's possible," Liv said, her voice shaky, "but I've never even heard the word Calum until a few days ago." Cedric nodded, though he didn't seem especially reassured. "But you were drawn to the very museum where we were staying." "No, I had an appointment at the museum, because I wanted to get rid of the sword you left behind. I wouldn't have even seen you that day, except..." Liv thought about the day at the museum, the moment before she'd followed Cedric down into the tunnels. She'd been wandering and was drawn into the languages exhibit. She turned to Cedric. "In the museum, I was lost, and I found this symbol..." Liv broke off and grabbed the complimentary pad of paper lying on the motel's nightstand. She tore off the cap of the cheap pen next to it and started drawing the symbol on the pad. She remembered it clearly. The circle, the two dagger-like extensions that reached from its bottom half. "I didn't know what it meant. I still have no idea. But it looked familiar somehow. I was curious and couldn't shake it." Cedric reached over for the pad of paper, his hand brushing slightly against Liv's. His eyes widened in recognition. "Yes, this is one of our ancient symbols in Calum. I saw it at the museum as well. It is why I thought we were on the right track to finding the scrolls. Although aside from this one symbol and a single piece of paper containing a few others, I couldn't find anything else related to Calum or my people at the museum." "What does it mean?"
"Knowledge," Cedric said. He traced the edge of the symbol with his finger.
"That's not one of the symbols on my tattoo. I'm pretty sure I've never even seen it before. So why did it feel so familiar?"
Cedric shook his head. "I do not know, but maybe you saw it somewhere else? Possibly with those people who mocked you?"
"Maybe." Cedric looked as though he was on the verge of figuring out a mystery. His eyes bore into Liv's, and his knee edged closer to hers on the bed. She was suddenly aware that he was just inches away, and she felt a blush creeping up the back of her neck.
"Once you had seen the symbol in the museum, what happened next? Try to remember everything."
"I followed you."
"Why? Do not leave anything out."
Liv raised an eyebrow. "You think I would? You did fail to mention the markings on your back. I didn't exactly know they were relevant."
"Yes, and maybe there were other things that happened that day that are relevant as well. Try to remember everything. What made you follow me?"
Cedric's eyes met hers, and their blue was so bright. She had to turn away, toward the motel window. His reflection there was muted, easier to handle.
"I don't really know," Liv said. "I guess I wanted to finally figure out who you were and what you were doing under the bridge that night. And why you were crawling into a hole in a museum wall. That was pretty weird. And then there was..."
"What?" Cedric leaned forward, eager. Liv gestured to their reflected images. There she was, with her flyaway hair and well-worn jeans. And there was Cedric, with his broad shoulders and annoyingly clear skin.
"That, there was also that."
Cedric's reflection looked confused, while Liv's turned red. Liv barreled on.
"I mean, look at you. You look like you just stepped out of an Abercrombie ad."
Cedric tilted his head.
"I do not know what this means."
"You were hot,
all right? His eyes remained blank. Cute, handsome, stupid, good-looking. Do any of those words mean anything in Calum?
Cedric didn't move a muscle. Then, one corner of his mouth twitched upward.
Some of them, yes.
Good. Liv's voice was sharp. I doubt any of that matters, but is it honest enough for you?
Yes, Cedric said, still smiling. And at least part of it does matter.
Yeah? And what's that?
You finally admit I'm good looking.
Liv's jaw dropped, and when she looked over to Cedric, the real Cedric, not his reflection, she saw he was barely suppressing a grin. She could feel one starting to spread across her face as well. She picked up the pillow from the bed and threw it at him. He dodged it easily.
You're hilarious, Liv said, deadpan.
Yes, and good-looking, don't forget.
And humble.
Oh, extremely humble. The most humble in all the land.
Cedric's voice broke into laughter on the last word.
Liv buried her face in her hands, trying to smother the laughter bubbling up, but it was a losing battle.
Ha, yes, Liv said, trying to suck in a deep breath between laughs. This is definitely a normal reaction for a person to have to all of this.
Hysterics! Is this a sign that I'm finally going crazy?
Cedric shrugged. How should I know? You all seem crazy to me here.
You know, I looked into a building once, with a huge window that faced a roadway, and I saw hordes of people running in place on these large machines, just running and running and not going anywhere.
That is crazy.
I actually agree with you on that one, Liv said. And I've seen women walking along, pushing dogs in carts. Dogs!
Liv burst into a fit of laughter again. Cedric joined her, and this time it took longer for the two of them to recover.
I think I needed that, she said, finally catching her breath.
Me too.
Listening to her breath normalizing, Liv felt lighter, like she always did after a laughing fit. But then she looked around the room, with its grim curtains and years-old bedspread. The confusion of their situation and all of their unanswered questions began to rise up again. Without thinking, Liv reached for her shoulder blade. Cedric was watching her. The remains of his smile slipped from his eyes. They took on that dark, hooded look again, following her hands to where they rested near her back.
Can I see it again?
He asked. Liv thought for a moment, then removed her jacket for the second time that evening. She half turned on the bed so that her back was facing Cedric, then slipped down the straps of her tank top. She heard him behind her, inching closer to where she sat on the bed.
If I had seen your tattoo before, I might have noticed.
I don't really make a habit of showing it to people, Liv said, trying to keep her voice light.
If the professor has no more information to provide, maybe we can locate these foster parents you spoke of, Cedric said. Perhaps they know the whereabouts of the true scrolls.
Maybe, Liv responded. She didn't really want to think about the Hannigans right now. She couldn't think of anything with Cedric's body so near to her own. The small hairs rose on the back of her neck, and she tried not to shiver, which became harder when he reached out a finger and placed it gently on the skin just over her shoulder blade, where the tattoo began.
Is this okay?
He asked in a hushed voice. Liv struggled to remember how to talk.
Yes. I do not know what these symbols mean. We no longer have the whole language, just pieces of it. My tutor tried to teach me the ancient symbols, but I never paid as much attention to our studies as M. I only remember a few.
Like the one for knowledge, Liv said, glancing down at the pad of paper that sat at the edge of the bed.
Yes, and the markings we carve onto our weapons. Some others.
Like what?
there is an ancient word carved above the main entrance of our castle. It means protector, and it begins with a letter that looks sort of like this one. Cedric's finger moved lightly from the tip of her shoulder blade, tracing down across her skin, following the swoops and arcs of the tattoo. Liv shut her eyes tight, blocking out everything in the room that wasn't the motion of his hand. Then, his fingers stopped moving, having reached the end of the tattoo. Liv shifted slowly, turning on the bed so that she was facing him. His face was only inches from hers, and she could make out with perfect clarity the lines of his cheekbones, the shape of his eyes, his mouth. "Liv," Cedric whispered, his voice hoarse. He reached up with one hand and touched her cheek. She leaned in closer. She couldn't help it. It wasn't even a thought, really. Thoughts were gone. There was just his face and his touch and his breath. "Who are you?" he whispered again, this time so low she could barely make it out. But if there was an answer to that question, she didn't know it. She didn't say anything back. Instead, she leaned forward, her lips getting closer to his, then brushing against them. All of a sudden, a huge, shattering noise cut through the night, breaking through their perfect near-silent bubble. Liv and Cedric flew back from each other, both turning to look at the wide, gaping space where the hotel window had been just moments before. Pieces of glass fell across the rough carpeting of the room. It was dark out, but Liv could make out the shapes of men standing outside the window frame. They were wearing dark robes with hoods that covered their faces. Cedric jumped up first, blocking the bed and Liv from the group outside. He reached into his waistband and pulled out a small knife. Liv couldn't even be annoyed that he'd gone against her wishes and brought a weapon with him on the trip. Cedric had been right all along. They were never safe. Liv looked around for an exit, but the only thing on the far side of the room was a windowless bathroom. A connecting door led between the motel room and the one right next to it, but Liv knew it would be bolted shut from the other side. The main door was right next to the window, and therefore right next to the advancing figures. Liv counted five of them, and as they moved forward she could see that their robes were actually a dark red. None of their faces were visible under their hoods. "Halt!" Cedric yelled out. "Come no closer!" He waved his knife in the air with his right hand. With his left, he reached to pick up a lamp from the nightstand by the bed. He held it clenched in one fist, aiming the bright bulb toward the figures. The hooded man closest to them, he could reach an arm through the window and touch the bright end of Cedric's lamp if he wanted, gave a low laugh.
"And you will fight us all off with a toothpick and a lamp, then?"
The man stepped right across the threshold of the window, and in one quick movement, his right arm shot out and twisted Cedric's knife hand. Cedric swung out with the lamp, but the man ducked. Another figure came forward and grabbed the knife from Cedric's trapped hand. Before Cedric could react, the first man reached up and removed his hood. The lamp lit his face from below, making his features look hideously distorted. Dark, triangular shadows rose from the sides of his nose and the lids of his eyes. It took Liv a couple of seconds before she recognized him, with his face as warped-looking as it was. But once she realized who it was standing before her in a blood-red robe, she was finally able to release the scream lodged in her throat. Professor Billings did nothing but laugh. The Knights of Valor.
"Run!" Cedric cried. He wrenched his arm free and stood to face the professor.
Liv scrambled off the other edge of the bed, looking desperately for some place to run to. She saw Cedric swing his arm down and smash the lamp against the hotel room floor. The shade popped off the end, and the light bulb smashed, sending the room into darkness. Through the dim light that trickled into the room from the street, Liv saw Cedric swing out with the remains of the lamp, which now had broken shards of light bulb sticking from its end.
Professor Billings jumped back from the sharp edge of the lamp, and it whirred past him harmlessly. The robed figures swarmed into the room behind the professor. Two of them moved to block the front door. Liv turned and ran across the room to the connecting door.
"Help! Help us!"
Liv pounded her fist against the door, but the men were right behind her. One thick arm reached out and clamped down on her shoulder, while another wrapped itself around her waist, squeezing the breath from her lungs.
"Cedric!"
she choked out. She tried kicking her legs out at the two men who held her, but every time she flung a limb, one of them was there to grab it and hold it still. Soon she was completely immobile. Liv twisted her head to see Cedric standing on the bed, brandishing his lamp down at the professor and two more robed figures who flanked him.
"There's no point in fighting,"
Professor Billings said, his voice calm. Cedric responded by thrusting the end of his lamp up to the edge of the professor's jaw, just centimeters from the skin of his neck. The professor merely smiled in response. In the dim light pouring in through the broken window, the whites of Cedric's eyes grew in fear.
"Who are you, really?
Did the robes not give us away? We are the Knights of Valair, an ancient sect tasked to keep this world safe from its most dangerous threat."
The professor smiled, his eyes once again twinkling like they had in his office.
"We're the good guys."
Cedric clenched the lamp tighter.
"I have a little trouble believing that at this precise moment." "I understand that you're frightened, but put that thing away before anyone gets hurt,"
the professor said, his voice calm. One of the robed men holding Liv squeezed her arm, and she yelped. Cedric's gaze flashed quickly to Liv, and after a second's pause, he pulled the broken lamp a few inches from the professor's neck.
"We are not your enemy," Cedric said, voice tight.
"We only wanted answers."
Professor Billings shook his head slowly.
"You know, I do believe you. At first, I even believed that ridiculous story about doing research for a paper. But then, when I saw her back..."
The professor looked to Liv, his eyes narrowing.
"I had to call reinforcements and follow you here. I cannot stand by and risk her being used to open a portal and let the greatest evil ever known filter back into this world."
"Use her to open the..."
Cedric trailed off as he shook his head faintly. Then his body went completely still. He looked over at Liv, meeting her eyes. Seeing the understanding and fear written all over his face, Liv couldn't deny the truth of the professor's words. The truth etched upon her back. She was the one who could open the portal to Cedric's world. She was the scroll.
"No,"
she whispered.
"Yes," Professor Billings said,
and he sounded almost gentle, except he obviously wasn't. It was the worst kind of pretending.
"I imagine it comes as quite a shock to you. After all, I don't believe you would have shown me your markings if you knew what they really were or who I really was. Poor child. You really did believe it was a tattoo, didn't you?"
"But..."
Liv sputtered. Of course the markings were a tattoo. They were permanent, after all. She didn't remember getting them, but that's because she'd been so young. At the mercy of crazy foster parents. It had to be a tattoo. What else could it have been?
"Everything I told you at the office is true," the professor said. "Though the mythical scrolls of Calum are real, very much so, and they're not printed on any ancient paper lost to the centuries. No piece of paper could hold that kind of power. Only human energy could contain the power of the scrolls. Don't you understand?"
The professor looked at Liv, his eyes imploring.
"Don't you see how dangerous you are?"
"No," Liv managed. "I'm not. Honestly, there's been a mistake."
The professor shook his head, and the arm around Liv's throat tightened.
"Our ancestors used willing sacrifices to create the first portal and expel the wrath threat from our world. What they didn't know, what none of them could have foreseen, was that their axe would outlast them. 20 years after the portal was opened and wraths were banished from the earth, a group of children was discovered in an outlying village. They were covered in marks, the same marks that had been imprinted on the first human scrolls. The magic didn't die, you see, but tied itself to the human race. Earth magic can be tricky like that. Even when you think it's completely gone, it can pop up in the most unexpected of places. Like that carnival game, whack-a-mole. The professor grinned at his own joke. Liv felt sick. Every 20 years or so, a group of new children with the markings would be discovered, which meant they had the power to open a portal. Liv wanted to fight the words he was saying, to convince herself they were lies, but so much of it was starting to click. She remembered the wrath in the alley, the one who had let her go moments after tearing the back of her shirt, and then returned the next night with backup. They'd come back looking for her. They knew. They knew what she was. Cedric's hand tightened on the lamp end. What happened to them? The children? Professor Billings's eyes flashed for just a moment, and his face was grave once again. The Order did what had to be done, to prevent horror from falling upon us. The scrolls did not belong in this world. He gave a tiny shake of his head. We had to whack the moles. A shiver shot down Liv's back. Her voice cut through the room. You killed them. The professor lowered his eyes to the floor. Yes. To protect the world. Yes. But every 20 years since the Middle Ages, that's so many. It is a terrible but sacred birthright to find the scrolls in every generation and eliminate them. It was the job of my father before me and his father before him. Everything in the room seemed suddenly hazy. It was only when her eyes caught Cedric's that Liv was able to regain some focus. Even in the darkened room, his bright eyes shone out, but instead of fear, they were shining with anger. They held eye contact for just a moment before Cedric flicked his eyes over to the door behind her that connected their room to the next room over. Cedric gave a tiny raise of his eyebrow, and Liv gave the briefest of nods in return. Professor Billings looked in mock sadness at his own hands, clasped before him. And now, my dear, you must know what happens next. Liv stayed perfectly still, waiting for any movement from Cedric. It's not that we want to, of course, the professor continued. You seem like a perfectly lovely girl, but even if you yourself mean no harm, it would be too easy for you to fall into the wrong hands. That's why we cannot let you leave this room alive. The professor reached down into his robe and took out a silver object that reflected the light of the street lamps outside the window. He flipped it open, revealing a long blade, sharpened to a point. It was then that Cedric started to laugh. At first, it was low, almost disbelieving. Then it grew louder and louder. The robed men standing behind Liv shifted uneasily. She used the small amount of room this afforded her to situate her elbow between herself and the ribs of the man closest to her. She kept it there, ready. As Cedric laughed, the professor's features pulled taut in annoyance. "What do you find so funny?" "You," Cedric said, shaking his head and grinning. "You really love to hear yourself talk, and after all your self-righteous speeches, this is what you've come to threaten us with. A single plate." "You think this is amusing?" the professor asked, his voice dropping into a low growl. "I think I know something you do not,"
Cedric said, keeping his voice light.
You may know what she is, but you clearly have no idea what I am.
Cedric's mouth curled up into a smile. Allow me to educate you, Professor. Cedric's arm was moving before he even finished the sentence.
He swung it around so fast that Liv could barely tell what he was doing. Only when the professor stumbled and fell to one knee did she realize that Cedric had hit him in the face with the blunt end of the lamp.
One of the robed men near the bed bent down to aid the professor, while the other advanced on Cedric. He spun around and kicked out straight. Liv heard the crack as Cedric's foot connected with the face of the robed man.
Cedric leaped off the bed toward Liv.
She was ready for him. Before Cedric's foot even hit the floor, Liv jammed her elbow up into the abdominal area of the closest man holding her. He doubled over, groaning and releasing his grip on her ever so slightly. The other man holding her tried to tighten his grasp, but by the time his thoughts translated into actions, Cedric was already there. He was so fast, so impossibly fast, that Liv could barely make out his expression as he kicked out at the man who still held her, while the man she'd elbowed reached into his robe and brought out a short, gleaming knife.
Kill her!
The professor gurgled from beside the bed. He had one hand over his face, and Liv could see blood streaming through his fingers. The robed man with the knife lunged at Liv, but Cedric pulled her away just in time. The knife sliced nothing but air. Before Liv could blink, Cedric kicked at the connecting door's lock with one powerful blow. The cheap wood cracked inward, separating from the deadbolts on both sides. Liv put her hands over her face to protect it from shards of wood, as Cedric shouldered his way through the remains of the door. Liv barely had time to feel hot, angry breath on her neck before her head went snapping backward. One of the robed men had grabbed her by the hair and yanked. She kicked out at his kneecaps, but his grip only loosened a tiny bit. Already through the door, Cedric grabbed Liv's arm and pulled her through into the next room. She yelped as some of the hair tore from her head. The robed man who held onto her hair tumbled over the broken remains of the door and fell into the room. Liv saw two others preparing to crawl over him, including the one with the knife. Liv barely had time to take in the room's occupant. An elderly woman wearing a patterned bathrobe was lying on the bed, her mouth open in shock. Liv saw her reach up with one hand to adjust a hearing aid. Cedric raced through the room's outer door to the parking lot, lifting Liv clean off the ground to sprint the few paces to the car. Liv had never moved so quickly in her life. She didn't even risk a quick look back at the motel as she fished her keys out of her pocket and jammed her shaking fingers onto the unlock button. Cedric was already seated in the passenger seat by the time she got behind the wheel. Liv locked the car doors just as the robed men gathered around it. One tried to open the driver's side door as Liv turned the ignition key. When it didn't budge, he pounded his fist against the glass. Another robed man jumped up onto the hood of the car, and Liv screamed. She could see the rounded outline of his face, the lines of his long nose, the dark of his eyes. He wasn't like the Wraths who'd tried to kill her. He was disturbingly human. She threw the car into reverse and pumped on the gas. As she spun the wheel, the man went flying off the hood and onto the pavement. For just a moment, through Cedric's window, Liv saw the professor standing in the doorway of the motel room, one hand gripping the frame. Blood still poured from his nose. Liv barreled out of the parking lot onto the highway's on-ramp, merging with the free-moving traffic. Are they following us?
Cedric turned in his seat and looked out the back window.
There are so many lights.
Liv cursed under her breath and checked the rearview mirror. Cedric was right. She saw a line of headlights stretching out behind them, but couldn't tell if any of these cars belonged to the robed men. She pumped the accelerator, trying to put more distance between her car and the approaching lights, wondering how much distance it would take before she would start to feel safe, if she'd ever feel safe again.
You realize what this means, right?
I'm the MacGuffin. The MacGuffin is me.
Cedric didn't seem to hear her, or maybe he wasn't paying attention, which made sense, since he'd been busy staring out the back window to make sure no one was following them for the past 2 hours, while Liv prattled on in panic mode.
I mean, a Skrull?
I'm a Skrull? What is that? What am I?
Cedric finally turned around in his seat and faced forward.
You are still you. Still live, he responded.
His words were reassuring, but his voice sounded like he was on autopilot. Liv wasn't sure if she believed him. A few hours before, they'd been alone on a motel bed, Cedric and Liv, just a boy and a girl about to...
And now, she wasn't just a girl anymore. She was something else, something more, or maybe something less. If she really was some kind of ancient Skrull, then, well, what did that even mean? That she could open portals?
The professor said that every generation, children had exhibited markings like hers. But she hadn't been born with the markings. Of that, she was sure. But if the Hannigans hadn't tattooed her, then how and when did the markings get there at all?
Liv gripped the steering wheel tighter. She had so many questions that only the professor could answer, but there was no way she was going back to ask him. And she couldn't bring herself to ask the questions out loud, although she knew Cedric must be thinking at least some of the same things.
His only goal since coming over to this world was to find a Skrull, and now he had. But if he was thinking about somehow using her to get back to his home world, he wasn't saying so. Instead, he kept his mouth closed and his eyes trained on the rearview mirror. And one more thing Liv couldn't say out loud. That the thought of him leaving, the thought of physically helping him to go, made her feel strangely empty, scooped out inside. That was something she obviously had to keep to herself. Liv tried to maintain her attention on the Los Angeles skyline as it rose in the distance, its tall glass buildings twinkling in the night. It was better than seeing her own pale face in the rearview mirror, with the brand new bruise she had just under her chin. She was collecting injuries at an alarming rate.
I thought for a second I was going to die back there, Liv finally said, her voice nearly a whisper.
Cedric's expression was stony. I would not have let anything happen to you.
Because I'm the Skrull?
He tensed beside her, but she didn't know if it was because he was angry or because she was right.
That is not what I meant.
Liv spotted their exit sign and watched as it grew nearer and nearer.
Almost home,
she whispered, more to herself than to Cedric. He looked away from her, out the side window.
Almost.
The Revelations. Although it was nearly midnight when they finally got back to the house in Echo Park, Cedric and Liv weren't able to rest. Merrick and Kat, who were still wired from their own mission, wanted to hear every last detail of what happened in San Diego, the professor, and their escape that almost wasn't. When Cedric explained about Liv's tattoo and what it could mean, a one-way trip back to Calum, Kat let out a whooping noise.
You were right! The Skrulls exist! I knew you were right!
Kat said, clapping a hand on Cedric's shoulder.
And she never shut up about it either, Merrick said, but his heart clearly wasn't in his customary sarcasm.
He couldn't keep the smile, an actual smile, off his face. He didn't even flick his ever-present lighter as he eagerly took in Cedric's story.
We still do not know what the next step should be,
Cedric began, sitting up straighter. Surrounded by his friends, he seemed more sure of himself than he had during the anxious car ride home.
We will figure it out, Kat replied. We have a Skrull now, and there are other things we know now, too.
Cedric's eyebrows furrowed. You found something at the museum. Kat smiled.
A wrath was waiting there, just as we thought.
Wait until you hear what she did, Merrick put in. Even I can admit it was brilliant.
Kat grinned.
Merrick and I split up. He went to get the rest of our belongings, and I looked around the perimeter. The wrath was alone and unprepared for me. I do not believe they really thought we would return. It was one of those who attacked us last night. I dragged him through the grate and into the tunnels, and I threatened him, but only a bit.
A bit? Merrick gave a sly grin. When I caught up to you, the Wrath looked more than a bit scared.
I would not want to be that Wrath, Cedric said. Anyhow, Cat continued, clearly pleased.
The Wrath said they were under orders to find the Marked One, which I did not understand at the time.
He meant me, Liv interjected. She was sitting a little outside their circle, and they all turned to look at her.
That makes sense, Cat finally said. He also said he was not from here. He came from Calum, like we did. He came through the portal shortly after us, on the orders of Malquin.
Malquin? Cedric immediately became alert.
Cat nodded. But he claimed he did not know where Malquin is now. He said only that his orders were to find us and discover what we knew about the Marked One.
So, Malquin is looking for the scrolls as well.
Not only that, but he knew the scrolls were in human form, Cedric said.
Where is this Wrath now?
Cat averted her eyes. Gone. When it had no more information to give, I thought it would be a good plan to let it go and then follow. I wanted to know if it was telling the truth or if it might lead me to Malquin.
Cedric nodded.
Smart. It might have been, Cat continued. But the Wrath got away from me in the alleyways several blocks from the museum.
Cedric was quiet for a moment before shooting Cat a reassuring smile.
You did well. We know so much more now.
Cat smiled.
And we might have finally found a way home.
Liv could practically feel the mix of tension and excitement coursing off everyone in waves. She was just tired.
Excuse me, she said, standing up in the middle of a conversation about what their next steps should be, now that a scroll was in their possession. She knew that her input was important, and that, as the scroll in question, she should voice her opinion about what to do next. But whenever she closed her eyes to think, she instead pictured the professor's unnerving smile, the righteous look in his eyes when he had promised to end her life.
"Are you all right?" Cedric asked. He looked at her directly for what felt like the first time in hours.
"I just need some air," Liv said, and left to make her way toward the back porch.
Cedric stood.
"Maybe I should go with you."
Liv blinked.
"Why?"
Cedric looked taken aback. After a moment, he straightened. When he spoke again, he sounded less filled with concern and more like he was giving orders to an unruly soldier.
"Those knights are after you, and from what Cat said, the Wraths are definitely after you too. If Malquin wants to get a hold of a scroll..."
"I mean, of you, it cannot be for a good reason."
"I know all this."
"Liv, it is not safe," Cedric said.
"It's the porch. Like 10 feet away. Besides, I've been taking care of myself for 10 years, and I can take care of myself now. I don't need you to hold my hand."
Hurt flashed across Cedric's face for a moment, but it was gone as quickly as it appeared. He opened his mouth as if he wanted to say something, but Cat put a gentle hand on his elbow.
"Give her a moment. It has been a long night."
Surprised, Liv shot Cat a grateful smile before leaving the room. She pushed the back door open, relishing the feel of a light breeze on her face. She didn't turn around to see whether or not Cedric was still looking at her as she firmly shut the door. Staring at the night sky, Liv was overtaken by a disorienting but familiar feeling. It was the same one she always got the instant the lights came up in a theater at the end of a movie. During those moments, it would take a few seconds to disengage her mind from the make-believe and readjust to the reality around her, the too bright room with sticky floors that smelled of stale popcorn. For those few seconds, her brain was confused, stuck in a place between real and fake. That's what it felt like now. She tried to focus on something real. Almost immediately, she knew what to do.
Shannon picked up just after one ring.
Where are you?
Exactly where you dropped me last night. Sorry to call so late. Shannon scoffed, and Liv smiled in the darkness. Though it had been barely 24 hours since they'd last spoken, it felt like much longer.
You promise me answers, and then I don't hear from you for a whole day?
I know, I'm sorry. I've sort of got stuff going on.
Obviously. Although if you could clarify what the stuff is, I'd feel much better.
Liv could hear the lightest amount of hurt in Shannon's voice. But how could she tell her best friend the truth without Shannon thinking she was crazy? Or worse, what if telling Shannon put her in danger?
I know everything with Rita was hard, Shannon said after a few moments.
The compassion in her best friend's voice made Liv's chest feel like it was being squeezed by a large fist. A tear formed near the corner of her eye, causing the backyard to blur. Liv put the palm of her hand up against her eye and pressed down hard before the tear could fall.
It was, she whispered. But there is more than that.
Tell me, Liv. Tell me what's going on.
Liv hesitated, thinking about how good it would feel to say a single real thing out loud to Shannon. But she couldn't tell her one piece of the puzzle without telling her everything. The tattoo, the portal, the wraths, the motel. Cedric. Most of all, she wanted to talk to Shannon about Cedric. But she couldn't. If she started talking about Cedric or any of it, who knew what else would come pouring out? Not just the details of the last few days, but everything, her past, her parents. Once the truth was out, she wouldn't be able to stuff it back inside, just like she hadn't been able to put it back after revealing the truth about the fire to Cedric in the car. Could she really stand Shannon looking at her any differently? Even if her best friend deserved the truth, what if she got a glimpse of what was really inside of Liv and ran?
I wish I could, Shan. I really do.
Shannon sighed. For a while, both girls were silent.
What if we meet up tomorrow morning, face to face? Shannon asked.
Liv glanced back over her shoulder at the back door. Beyond it, she knew that Cedric and the others were still endlessly discussing what to do next. She wondered how long it would take them to decide exactly how and when they would use her to get home. Would they leave her here when they were done with her, used up and alone for the Wraths, or the Knights, or whoever got there first? Who would she have on her side then?
Liv, I'm here.
Yeah, tomorrow sounds good.
The usual spot?
Liv frowned as she thought of the familiar piece of concrete down by the LA River. Her usual spot. How many times had she and Shannon met there to hang out, do homework, or complain about life? A part of her longed to go back there, but now even her favorite place was too wrapped up in this madness. After all, it was where she'd first seen Cedric and his friends. A portal had opened in the exact spot where she and Shannon used to paint their nails and talk about movies. She wanted to go somewhere else, somewhere untainted by the past few days.
No, not there, Liv said.
How about that spot we went to on our 9th grade field trip, where we tried cigarettes for the first time and then threw up?
Yeah, that was a good day.
Because of or despite the vomiting?
Liv laughed.
Both, I guess. We were just two regular teenagers doing something dumb.
I miss that.
We're still regular teenagers. Liv didn't respond, and Shannon got quiet.
You're kind of freaking me out.
I'm sorry. Will you still come?
Noon?
Of course I will.
Tomorrow, Liv.
Night, Shannon.
Liv hung up the phone and looked around the backyard. It had been a relief to hear Shannon's reassuring voice in her ear, to hear something normal. But it only took a few minutes for that feeling to pass. The emptiness of the yard seemed to stretch and grow into the night, past Liv's field of vision. Still, she wasn't ready to face the others yet. She decided to wait until they'd fallen asleep before going back inside to rest herself. Liv sunk down low in a lawn chair, feeling even more alone than before. The next morning, Liv found that getting out of the house wouldn't be so easy. There are not one, but two groups of enemies trying to capture and probably kill you, Cedric said. He made emphatic movements with his hands, which reminded Liv of Joe at his most serious. It also made her angry. You think I don't know that? I was there in the motel room last night, just like you. I was scared, too. Motel room, Kat cut in. I was not scared, Cedric shot back. Liv just raised an eyebrow. Why were you in a motel room? Kat asked. No one answered her. Instead, a quiet tension fell over the living room of the Echo Park house. Merrick watched Liv face off with Cedric and Kat, an almost bemused expression on his face. A motel is like an inn, right? Kat asked, her eyes bouncing between Cedric and Liv. Cedric waved his hands. We were attacked there. What is important now is that we work together to try to figure out our next step. We cannot let Liv fall into the wrong hands. Kat pursed her lips, but said nothing. I don't intend on falling into anyone's hands, Liv said, crossing her arms over her chest. But I'm not going to sit around in this house and wait until you come up with some grand plan on how best to use me, either. A part of Liv knew that Cedric was right, that she was in way over her head here. She doubted that the Knights would be able to track her down to this house after she and Cedric lost them in San Diego, but the Wraths had been distressingly good at keeping up with Cedric and his group, a group that now included her. Still, the thought of getting away by herself for just 2 hours, to sit in the sunshine with Shannon, being normal for just a little bit, it was too tempting to pass up. Especially since it was starting to really sink in that her previously normal life was about to change, probably forever. After all, being a Skrull made her a fugitive from the Knights. Could fugitives do senior year? Or go to college? Or make movies? The future she had so carefully planned and waited for was slipping away, and she wanted, needed, to see Shannon and hold on to what she could. But how could she explain that to Cedric? I must agree with Cedric on this, Kat said, though her face was still stormy, probably because she was thinking about the motel. I am sorry, Liv, but you cannot think only about yourself right now. You are no longer just a girl. You are our only means to get back to Calum. Right. Just some scroll. Some ticket home. Liv shot back. She could feel the force of her argument against the two of them wavering as they stood side by side. They looked impressive, almost regal. And in the end, she knew they could keep her here in this room as long as they wanted. She might be a supernatural scroll thingy with one or two self-defense moves up her sleeve, but she still had all the muscle of a 16-year-old girl who'd taken her gym class pass-fail. She'd have to try another tactic. I'll help you get home, but I won't be your prisoner, Liv said. At the word prisoner, Cedric winced slightly. All I want is to see my best friend in a safe public place for a couple of hours. You can even come with me if you want. Then, if any Wrath somehow managed to find us, I'll have just as much protection there as I would here. Liv met Cedric's eyes as she continued. Unless you don't think you can take them. Cedric's jaw tightened. That is not the problem. I can handle the Wraths. Good. Then there should be no issue with us going. Cedric? Kat turned to Cedric. But Liv spoke over Kat, looking directly into Cedric's eyes. You need me, she said. But I need this. Cedric, please. Cedric looked at her for a few moments before he gave a slight nod. Liv is right. We cannot cower in fear of them. The Wraths or the Knights. We need to determine what Malquin is up to.
but we need Liv's cooperation as well if we want to get home.
Liv let out a long breath.
Well, isn't this an interesting turn? Merrick said.
He smirked as he looked between Kat and Cedric.
And do you agree with him now, Katerina? Haven't you always said we should follow him in all things because he is our leader?
Kat looked stretched tight, like a rubber band about to snap. She turned to Cedric.
You are sure about this?
A flicker of doubt rose up in Cedric's face, and Liv felt guilty. She remembered him telling her how hard it was to be the leader, to have every decision fall to him.
I am, Cedric said, then looked to Liv. I will keep you in my sight at all times, and we will only be gone for a couple of hours.
Yes, Liv said as she exhaled sharply, afraid to say anything else that might work against her.
I guess it is all decided then, Kat said, her voice brittle. Though I am going with you, should there be any trouble.
Merrick swung his legs off the side of the armchair and onto the floor. He tilted his head up at Liv.
I think I will go as well.
Cedric narrowed his eyes.
Why? To see more of this world, mostly, Merrick responded with a lazy grin. Now that I know we are close to going home, I find myself interested in exploring more of this place than its dungeons and dusty rooms. Besides, I prefer to be present should things come to fisticuffs between Kat and our suddenly interesting new friend here.
Then you will be disappointed, Kat said. Merrick shrugged.
We should go soon, Cedric said, raising his voice a little louder than necessary to cut through the tension.
Liv explained they'd just have to make a quick stop at the Walgreens on the corner, where she'd withdraw more cash and buy some cheap disposable phones for everyone, just in case. As they started to get ready, Liv slipped out onto the front porch. She wanted to enjoy a little precious time alone in the sunshine, without feeling weighed down by the expectations of everyone in the house, without feeling watched.
She got about 15 seconds.
The front door of the house opened and Liv heard someone walk out onto the porch. Without even turning around, she said, Cedric, I'm okay. It's not Cedric. Liv turned to see Kat shut the front door and move toward her.
Oh, hi.
Kat wore a faded t-shirt and jeans that were torn at the knee. She looked comfortable in them and confident, though they most certainly have been different from her regular clothes of, what, armor? Tiaras? Liv couldn't picture it. She suddenly wondered what type of girl Kat would be if she'd been born on Earth. If she wasn't a medieval warrior princess, would she have been stuck up? Artsy? A cheerleader? Would they have been friends? Kat stopped next to Liv by the porch railing. She looked out over the street and the houses across the way.
I saw what you did in there, with Cedric.
What?
Stop,
Kat said, then turned to look at Liv.
Do not pretend. I have seen the way he looks at you. I know you have seen it too.
Kat's dark eyes bored into Liv's, and Liv looked away. She could feel herself flushing.
I'm not sure, she started. I mean, I don't think he and I...
He talks about you. A lot. Kat gave a small smile.
I am not jealous, despite what Merrick might believe.
Liv just nodded.
Okay. Whatever flirtations Cedric has now, they do not matter. None of that matters.
Liv could hear the unspoken pronoun in Kat's words. You don't matter.
Cedric and I are going to be together. We have known it since we were children, and nothing can change that. It is what is best for Calum, which means it is best for us.
Kat paused, then looked back toward the front window of the house. Nothing was visible through the window, but she and Liv both knew Cedric was in there.
Kat turned back to Liv. He will make a great leader someday. I know it.
A king has to be able to make the hard decisions. To do what is right, even if he does not want to. Cedric is capable of that. But here... Cat gestured to the space around them. To the street, the houses, to the very air. Here, it is harder for him. It is confusing. Liv didn't know what to say. I know he cares for you, Cat continued. But you cannot use that to turn him away from his responsibility. I didn't use anything, Liv said, defensive. But she remembered the way Cedric's eyes had softened when she pleaded right before he gave in. And I don't plan on getting in the way of anyone's responsibility. I'm glad, Cat said, her voice cool and even as her dark eyes stared down into Liv's. Because that is a good way for people to get hurt. With that, Cat turned around and walked back into the house. And Liv suddenly knew what type of girl Cat would be if she had been born on Earth. One to watch out for. As soon as the Griffith Park Observatory came into view through Liv's windshield, she felt immediately lighter. Cedric, Cat, and Merrick had barely spoken as she made the long, winding drive up the steep hill overlooking the whole of Los Angeles, and by the time she reached the top and parked the car, they were all looking around with wide eyes. The observatory stood directly in front of them, a massive half-globe structure filled with tourists and surrounded by hiking trails. They walked toward the railing on one side of the observatory and looked out, taking in the view of the hills, of the Hollywood sign, of the downtown skyscrapers off in the distance. It's like the view from the Westing Mountains in Kalem, only more, Merrick said, eyes wide. When have you ever climbed the Westing Mountains? Cedric asked. Merrick's face transformed from awestruck into his trademark sneer. You do not know everything about me. Cedric shrugged and turned back to the view. I'm a bit early to meet Shannon, Liv said, then pointed to the top of the observatory. Up there. Cedric scanned the roof, putting his hand to his eyes to shield them from the bright sunlight as he did so. I will keep my eyes on you from here. Merrick snorted. I am sure you will. Cedric opened his mouth to reply, then seemed to think better of it. He turned to Cat. Come, let us check the perimeter. He pointedly turned his back on Merrick as he walked off with Cat. As soon as they were gone, Liv turned to Merrick. Why do you have to do that? Go and make everything all awkward? Merrick shrugged with one shoulder. Everything is already awkward. I am merely giving it voice. No, it's more than that. You always give Cedric such a hard time. Believe me, Merrick said, turning back to face the Hollywood sign. In all of Cedric's life, he has never known a hard time. That's a bit unfair. Unfair? You have known him just a few days, and already you rush to his defense, though he does not need it. I have seen Cedric turn mathematics problems into gibberish and still earn top marks from his tutors. I have seen him cut into his dinner with a sword just to show off and receive only applause as response. I have seen him flirt with every girl in Kalem while treating his own future bride like a hunting mate, and yet she stays by his side. No matter what he does, his future is assured. He will one day rule an entire kingdom, and all he had to do to earn it was be born. And you speak of fairness. Liv quietly studied the darkened expression on Merrick's face. She remembered what Cedric had said about Merrick a few days earlier, that he was a second son, and what that meant for his future. You're right, she said. Merrick turned to her, shocked. It is unfair. I forget sometimes what a different world you guys came from. I mean, things aren't all equality, sunshine, and rainbows here, but at least most people can make their own futures. Merrick shook his head. How do you mean?
Here, it's not supposed to matter where a person comes from or who they are. They can be a leader anyway, or a business tycoon, or a YouTube star, anything. Not that it's always easy. I mean, less than 10% of all film directors are women, but